Hello and welcome to the Gravel Ride Podcast, where we go deep on the sport of gravel cycling through in-depth interviews with product designers, event organizers, and athletes who are pioneering the sport. I'm your host, Craig Dalton, a lifelong cyclist who discovered gravel cycling back in 2016 and made all the mistakes you don't need to make. I approach each episode as a beginner to unlock all the knowledge you need to become a great gravel cyclist. This week on the podcast, I'm excited to bring on professional cyclist Andrew L'Espérance from Canada. As you'll learn from the conversation, Andy's been racing mountain bikes since he was a child and has raced all types of disciplines. He's a member of the Maxxis Factory Racing Team and races both on the gravel and MTB circuits. As someone who cut his teeth as a mountain biker, I love these type of athletes on the circuit, and I'm always excited for gravel event organizers to throw in more technical terrain just to see how the technical abilities of these athletes might shine. I'm super excited to watch Andrew this season. Once again, he's part of the Lifetime Grand Prix. And as I mentioned before, he's also weaving in some of the biggest mountain bike events on the calendar. Before we jump into the conversation, I do need to thank this week's sponsor, Dynamic Cyclist. I feel like they're haunting me on Instagram and shaming me into stretching every night. If you don't know about Dynamic Cyclist, Dynamic Cyclist has created a vast video stretching programming library focused directly at cyclists and our needs. So they're not messing around with general stretching. They're really focusing their energy on the things we need as cyclists. I personally can attest that my back is in the best place it's ever been in a March because I've been stretching routinely every night based on the programming that I learned from Dynamic Cyclist. They've got a free trial, so there's no reason not to give it a go. Each of the programs takes under 15 minutes, so there's really no excuse not to squeeze it in. If you are interested in purchasing one of their programs, they've provided me with a 15% off coupon. Just use the code THEGRAVELRIDE, and that works for their monthly program or their annual program, both of which are surprisingly affordable. So I hope you go check them out at dynamiccyclist.com. With that business behind us, let's welcome Andrew to the show. Andrew, welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me, Craig.
Yeah, I'm excited to have this conversation. I know you're off to Europe tomorrow, so I appreciate you squeezing us in before you go.
Yeah, thanks for you making it happen too. I think you were just on traveling as well. So thanks for making it work with your schedule.
Yeah, absolutely. We always like to start off by learning a little bit more about you. Where'd you grow up and how did you originally find the bike?
I grew up on the east coast of Canada in the province of Nova Scotia, just outside the main city there, which is Halifax. Kind of grew up in a family that, you know, spent a lot of time outdoors, and we rode bikes together as a family on vacations. And I'm the youngest of four boys in the family. So I have three older brothers. And as you can imagine, like, I just looked up to my brothers big time, and especially my oldest brother. And he did a bike race once. So it was basically like, oh, I've got to do a bike race. And yeah, I just kind of did my first race when I was 12 and ran with it. And I've been racing ever since, kind of climbing the ladder, doing some education in there. Just been racing ever since, and obviously like sprinkling some other sports in there early on.
Yeah, was Nova Scotia the type of area where youth cycling was easy to come by?
I wouldn't say it was easy to come by. I think I was like fairly self-motivated, like to make it happen, and had some good support from my parents to make it happen. But there's definitely a tight-knit community, and I think they certainly took me under their wing for whatever reason, and helped me come up in the sport. But I guess the first race I did was a Tuesday night short track series, so from that perspective, certainly, that's a really great entry point for youth to the sport. When you say kind of youth programming, I kind of think about like a bike club or that sort of thing for, like, specifically for youth, because we see a lot of that around now, and there was certainly nothing like that. But that kind of forced me to kind of ride with the older people, and that were definitely better than me, and that kind of helped pull me along in the sport early on, for sure.
Were you sort of racing consistently at that young age, or did it take some time before you kind of really committed to a season?
I think when I did my first race, I was still doing other sports. So I was definitely not like full on right away. But it was definitely a slow process to get into it. It was more like regional racing first. I don't think I did any provincial level racing when I was 12. It was the racing I did was the short track series. It was like for, 8 or 10 weeks in the summer. And that was the racing. And it was,
yeah,
like that was the season. And then I just got more and more into it. And next year I did provincial level races. Then probably when I was 15, I went outside the province to race. And by that point, it was kind of like doing every kind of racing that I could, coming from a smaller province. There's not a ton of racing, but, so you kind of need to do all the things. So like do road, do cyclocross, do the mountain bike racing, do the group rides, all those things.
Yeah.
That's how I kind of started things off there.
And at what point did you start to see professional cycling as a career opportunity?
Yeah, I don't know. To be honest, maybe I just have started to see it as a legitimate career opportunity in the last couple of years. I have a degree in mechanical engineering. It was sort of, that was always kind of the way I was going to make money. And I never really saw bike racing as a way to make money, but I loved it and I could make it work.
Okay.
And I do think I did have ambitions to somehow figure it out to be a full-time athlete, whether, putting that professional label on it, is kind of, I feel like that's kind of different. But I definitely wanted to be a full-time athlete. It's a really great lifestyle, and I've just been chugging along, trying to figure out how to make it work. And I would say in the last 5 years, have figured that out. And
were you figuring that out from a, what's known as a privateer perspective, or 5 years ago, would you enter a team program?
Definitely not as a privateer. So I'm currently racing for Maxxis Factory Racing, and this will be my third year on the team. And prior to that, I raced for Norco Bicycles in various capacities for about 10 years, kind of finishing my career with them on the Norco Factory team. Those years, there was a period where there was some growth in the team, and they went to another level. They stepped up to the World Cup level, and that meant reducing the team size. And that left me without sort of factory team support for a couple of years. And in that time, I wanted to keep racing. So it was sort of like, okay, how do I do this? How do I keep doing this? And I created, or myself and a teammate created our own team called Forward Racing, brought in some other sponsors and kept the support from Norco, luckily. And so in a sense, that was sort of privateering, but it was also like, okay, we're putting in all this work to organize this sponsorship. Hey, let's support another rider too, or a couple other riders, like bring them up with us. So myself and my teammate brought on a younger athlete named Sean Fincham, and we supported him for 2 years.
That sounds like the racing we've been talking about has been on the mountain bike side. And since the listeners of this podcast may not necessarily be as familiar with that part of the sport, can you describe the type of mountain bike racing that you found yourself competing in?
Yeah, totally. Yeah. So XCO mountain biking, it's what's in the Olympics. It's kind of the short 90-minute race, done on a short course, 3 to 5 kilometers. You do, 5 to 7 laps. It's intense. There's technical features. That's the kind of racing I grew up on. And that was sort of, that was the racing that was available when I was coming up in the sport. And there's a pretty clear path within Canada, to do a national series, which is called the Canada Cup, and to perform at those races. And then you might get selected to do something with the national team, like an international race. And then you kind of just some opportunities open up that way. And so that's the kind of racing I grew up doing. That's the kind of racing I did for the majority of my career. And yeah, until I signed with Max's Factory Racing 3 years ago, that was my main thing. Doing, I brought it, I did it to the level that I was racing World Cups full time.
Got it. And so was it,
I mean, it's so funny, we've always, ever since I can remember, I've ridden a drop bar bike off road. My first bikes were mountain bikes, and then you're doing mountain bike racing, and you need to do some road riding. So that actually started for me with cyclocross. So my cyclocross bike was my road bike. It was my winter bike. It was my cross bike. And obviously, you're riding that off road. There's where I grew up in Nova Scotia. There's just plenty of bike path, like gravel bike paths and gravel roads to ride. So yeah, I would say it started with that early on. And I guess more recently, just like training, like for training opportunities, a gravel bike was just a good tool. When I was training for XCO racing, a gravel bike, it just opens up the routes you can ride. You can ride on potentially safer routes with less traffic, and it's just a whole lot of fun. And I love the adventure of riding a bike, and it's a lot easier to find adventure on a gravel bike, I feel, in general, in the places that I, spend the most time riding.
Gotcha. And was when you signed on with Maxxis Factory Racing, was gravel racing an original part of the deal when they looked at you as an athlete?
It was definitely, the team has always been focused on the mountain bike side of things, but the way the market, or like the way the racing is in North America, it's more like this off-road racing. So it's not all mountain bike. A lot of the biggest races are now gravel races. So yeah, I mean, that was definitely part of the conversation. And it was certainly something I was very interested in. I think I've shared this on a podcast before, but about 3 years prior to stopping my racing World Cups full time and signing with Maxxis and doing this off-road thing, I had an Unbound like lottery registration that I got. And I was never able to make it work with my schedule. And then the pandemic got mixed in there too. And I just never got to use it. The year that I could have used it was the year I signed with Maxxis, and we were going anyways. And Maxxis was a sponsor of Unbound. So, we had entries that way. So I ended up giving it away. But long story short, this kind of racing was on my radar for a while. I think I was, just before we started recording here, I was telling you, this adventure, I got my interest got shifted towards some of this adventure racing back in 2017 when I did the Croc Trophy. That's an 8-day mountain bike stage race across tropical North Queensland in Australia.
Yeah.
And yeah, just this very different racing compared to XCO. It's an adventure. And it, I just loved it. So ever since 2017, I've been, myself and my wife Haley have been trying to mix in these different race opportunities that are, that I would categorize as kind of adventure racing. So stuff like Epic Israel, we've done that a couple times, Swiss Epic, BC Bike Race, these sorts of things. And it's, I feel so lucky. I mean, I'm so fired up on what we're doing now, because it's basically those adventure races, but that's the full meal deal. Like, that's what we're doing full time.
Yeah, amazing. Now, yeah. I think you've been part of the Grand Prix for 2 years already, and you'll be in it again in 2024. Is that right?
Yeah, exactly. You got it.
How did you manage to kind of make that schedule work and hit those mountain bike races that you like? Obviously, the Grand Prix itself is not mountain bike heavy. There's a few occasions to ride your mountain bike, but not in the same way you had done in the past. I'm just curious, you know, obviously with the different skill sets required for the different types of racing, how you organized your year and your training so you can do things from, you know, 90-minute XC races to, yeah, 10-hour unbounds.
Yeah, I honestly don't know how we did that first year. We went in like, okay, let's do all the racing. And that's what we did. That first year, we still had, well, I say we, because Haley and I have been on this journey together, and we jumped from XCO racing to this more off-road stuff together. But yeah, that year we did 5 World Cups, alongside the Grand Prix, alongside a smattering of other races. And I think it was a big year of learning, which was amazing. There was so much newness to it all, which was also like super refreshing. I think I remember kind of reflecting on the season at the end of the year, and I color coded all the races that I did based on which ones were new. And it was like over half of them were brand new, and it was a large number of race days. It was like, it was above 35 racing days, and there was some stage racing in there. So it's a little different, but, just a lot of racing. And yeah, I don't really know how we did it. I can't pinpoint to like, there was no major thought put into the scheduling. It was like just saying yes.
If we can be there, we'll be there and pedal.
Totally. And it was a ton of fun. It ended up working out in general, in terms of like performance in the Grand Prix. But again, I think the level of all this racing is increasing, and I don't think that approach is going to work again. So there's definitely some lessons from the first couple of years, and I'm not prepared to like throw all my eggs in the, you know, just focus on the Grand Prix races. There's so many great events out there. And you know, I also want to continue to grow as a mountain biker and do challenging mountain bike events that really suit my, kind of my natural skill set and some of my best, some of my strengths as an athlete. So yeah, we're definitely mixing, or I'm mixing a lot of different events in this season along with the Grand Prix.
Yeah. Interesting. It'd be great to follow your season. Yeah. It's complicated. I can see, you know, over the last 3 years going to the third year of the Grand Prix here, there's definitely been this specialization. Obviously there's a lot of prize money on the line for those who do well and get into the top, whatever that gets paid out. But it is increasingly clear that a lot of athletes are just laser focused on it. And I think it's still going to be interesting this year to see those athletes who are out there doing their own thing and racing some other crazy races, as well as popping into these races, and see how the points end up shaking up throughout the year. It's it's an interesting equation. It's fascinating to me listening to the athletes figure out how to focus their time and energy.
Yeah, totally. And I mean, I think it is interesting because, like, you know, the racing that we're doing, it's the Grand Prix is this, it is the series in North America right now. But yeah, so there's just so many other good events. And, you know, I don't think any athlete is just doing the Grand Prix. And it is interesting to see, to see how athletes kind of spread their time and yeah, where their interests lie and all that. So it is cool to follow each athlete doing what they're doing alongside the Grand Prix.
I also think it's interesting with the two drop races to just sort of see how the strategies play out. You hope that people aren't dropping them because they're sick or injured and they get an opportunity to strategically say, hey, I'm not going to peak for that race because in the overall arc of my season, it just doesn't make any sense.
Yeah, totally. Yeah, it is. It is a, I mean, the season goes from April till end of October, and this is a long season. Yeah. And you need to be very good for all these races, and it's not possible to be kind of peaked for every single race. So yeah. Yeah, definitely some strategy involved. And I certainly learned a lot the first couple of years. Things went pretty well the first year, not so well last year. And it kind of, it definitely has me motivated to try to perform, kind of do all the right things to perform well all season long for that.
Are there specific races in the Grand Prix that you personally enjoy the most?
Yeah, certainly. Like Sea Otter Classic, it's definitely the most mountain bikey one. It's at sea level, and I really love the race course. To be honest, it's just it's super fast, fun riding. It's not one where you can really. It's not like you can rip this technical section and create a huge separation on the people you're truly racing against. Obviously there's some big gaps in skills between perhaps those with a mountain bike background and those with a gravel background, but it's, you know, you can't, there's not a huge opportunities for separations there, but it's an awesome race. And yeah, just the energy at that whole event with the festival alongside of it, it's pretty cool. And it's kind of like the season kickoff too. So that's exciting.
Yeah, for sure. And anything on the gravel bike side that you look forward to?
I mean, definitely Unbound, just like the scale of it. I would say that one's high on the list. And Big Sugar is a cool one too. I mean, I feel like I'm a beginner at this gravel stuff, and I'm still... I don't really have it figured out yet, to be honest. And so all these races still feel like opportunities, and they're very interesting to me. And, I guess Unbound and Big Sugar are probably my favorite gravel races in the series.
With Unbound being the longest one on the calendar on the gravel bike, side for the Grand Prix, How do you approach that as an athlete? I mean, obviously you train up to that distance. When you think about being competitive in an event like that, just kind of walk me through briefly, like the mindset of, like, you know, are you following the early moves, or are you conscious of, hey, this is a 200 mile day, and, you know, maybe I'm not the most I don't have the most endurance of everybody in the peloton. I'm just curious, like, how you manage that to maximize the best result possible for you.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, when I go into those races, there's no pacing. It's going with the front of the race as long as you can. I'm going to try to make the front group. I'm going to try to get on the podium. I'm not going to have a deliberate strategy to not follow so I can, you know, finish 20th. Like that's, I'd much rather go for it and blow up than not go for it. That being said, I do, you know, we learned last year that there is definitely some, in terms of taking care of equipment, in certain conditions, like, you know, very rough conditions, muddy conditions, there does have to be some strategy surrounding how you ride that stuff. So I'm definitely taking that into Unbound this year, just that whole experience.
Were you caught up in any disastrous way in the mud this past year?
Yeah, just I lost my derailleur very early on. Kind of snapped off in the mud, and it was
Was that game over for you?
Yes, I tried everything I could to try to keep it going, but yeah, it was game over, and it was just very that was tough, I guess. I definitely learned from that experience, because I had never dealt with that kind of mud before. And it's really something you need to experience to fully understand. Looking forward to going in there a little more prepared and having those experiences under my belt, and yeah, hopefully a little bit of luck too. But, you know, I think in chatting with my friend Ian, who did quite well, who's done quite well at that race, his strategy was just kind of sitting back and watching a little bit how the first section played out, and definitely a more conservative approach. But I was like third wheel into that mud, riding on Tobin's wheel. I think when my derailleur came off, I was sitting on Russell or Keegan's wheel and just riding the race as best as I could and going for it. Those conditions, you know, if my bike can make it through it, it's a huge advantage for me. Just because that is, you know, some technical ability is a huge asset, just pedaling the bike through that stuff. But you need to have a bike that stays together to take advantage of those that opportunity.
Yeah, 100%. I'm one of those sort of people who started out mountain biking like yourself, and I love the technical elements of gravel racing, and the harder technically the races are, the more fun I think they are.
Totally.
That's sort of where I hope the sport would go. And frankly, you know, as the Grand Prix got announced, like I've always been hopeful for the mountain bikers to get more of an opportunity, not only in the mountain bike specific races, but in the gravel races, to just kind of show that skill set.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm with you on this. I would really like to, maybe just see a little more texture in some of these gravel races. I really like what the BWR does, pulling in some single track. I did a couple years ago, I did a race in BC called BCBR Gravel. And, you know, BCBR is a BC bike race. So it's the same promoters that do this, you know, 7-day mountain bike stage race. So the gravel version of it was what you can expect from the organizers of a mountain bike stage race. And it was very gnarly. I kind of joked at the race. Like I wrote a taper cast, the Fox taper cast fork during that race. And it was like, oh man, if you had a truck full of those at the finish line of that race, you could have sold them all. No worries. It was like a huge advantage to have, have suspension on the gravel bike.
Yeah. It's so interesting. Do you ever, you know, as someone who's obviously well adept with suspension and using it on your mountain bikes, how often do you consider it on your gravel bike?
Yeah, it's always a tough decision. And it's like, I'm not sure if you've ridden it, but riding a suspension fork on a gravel bike it's an amazing feeling, and it's wild how much more capable the bike becomes. It's 100%. So much more than what you think.
I've got one on my bike for Mount Tam here in Marin County, and I can't even explain how much more confidence inspiring it is going downhill. And it's kind of cheating for me, because I've got a mountain bike background, so generally I ride harder downhill than most of my contemporaries. But putting that suspension fork on. It's just, it's almost unfair at times.
So I'm
curious to kind of drill into that a little bit as a suspension owner. So what is that? Tell us more about that line for you. I mean, when would you consider it? Is the main downside in your mind just the weight? And if it's a climby race and you need to stay up at the front, you got to shed the weight, and otherwise you'd use it?
Yeah. So I think I reach for it quite often, to be honest. My first year at Unbound, I rode it. That was 2 years ago. And it was a huge advantage in the rough stuff. But the thing is, that kind of just kept me near the front of the group and out of trouble. It's not like it gave me a huge advantage in the race overall.
Did you feel like does fatigue come into play when you think about it?
I mean, it's so hard to get a sense of that because, you know, no matter what bike you ride, if you're riding Unbound for 10 hours, fatigue's going to be high. I've not done I think that would be a fairly hard thing to test. And I've not done back-to-back testing on that, but it really does. The way I think about it is if it's going to give you an advantage in the race, and sometimes it will, sometimes it won't, and it needs to be at the right time in the race.
Yeah.
So I did BWR Vancouver Island last year, and in the first bit there was some heavy duty single track, and I just rode away from the whole race and was 2 minutes off the front by the bottom, you know, in the first hour of the race. But this isn't super helpful because it's a 7 hour race, and then I was off on my own for the next 2 hours. From a tactical point of view, that wasn't great. But the final descent on that course was one where a few K from the finish, having a suspension fork would have been an advantage. So it's sort of okay, do I carry this around for the whole race? It's definitely a little bit heavier, not as aerodynamic, but in those sections, it's like a laughable advantage.
Yeah. Yeah, I think I think it goes with almost every part of a gravel bike. It seems like you have to make these trade-offs and decide where is it going to benefit you. Like as a recreational racer, I consider comfort to be a big part of it, right? I got to get through these races to enjoy them.
Yeah. But
comfort at the cost of, you know, an extra pound or so may come to bite me in the ass climbing 12,000 feet in a day.
Maybe. It depends on what your goals are. Like for me, I really need to think this through, but if I was riding my bike for purely for fun and trying to enjoy, and especially if I wasn't racing, suspension fork on the gravel bike for sure. As long as the terrain you ride and the way you ride kind of suits it. If you go on to double track and single track, and you have access to that in your area and you enjoy that, it's like, yes, get yourself a gravel suspension fork. It's going to be great. You're going to have a huge smile on your face. It's going to be fun. And you'll be able to drop your friends. No question.
I think you've been training this winter down in Santa Cruz, California. Is that right?
Yeah. We've been, we did, passed through Santa Cruz on, I did this, Rob Britton and I did this ride down the down the entire coast of California. And then spent a week here after that training. And then I've been here for the last couple of weeks. So basing out here for quite a bit and just really enjoying the kind of road riding here.
Amazing. Before we go, I'm curious to just learn about your bike choices for the year. What brands are you riding on the mountain bike and the gravel bike, and you know, what do you like?
I don't believe our mountain bike sponsor has been made public yet, so I'm going to stay quiet on that. But we're on new drop bars bikes for this year, and that's so we're on Time bikes, which is exciting new brand, new to us brand. Obviously it's a pretty storied brand that's been around for a while.
Yeah, and we just had them on the podcast about a month ago, learning all about the new owner, the manufacturing processes for that bike. I think that the ADHX 45 looks like a rad bike to ride.
Yeah, no, I listened to that episode. It was great. I really enjoy kind of hearing the background and the business dynamics of some of these companies in the industry. And yeah, the bike looks really great. I've just seen one once. When I was down in Bentonville at the end of the season, and it looks really good. So I'm very excited to get on one and yeah, really push it. And yeah, it's going to be fun.
Yeah. Awesome. When do you think you'll first race on that bike?
Yeah, first race will be BWR Utah. So yeah, okay. Once I get back from Spain after the stage race, probably spend some time on that, get it set up, get it dialed, and yeah, that'll be a great first one for it. And yeah, can't wait. It's gonna be good.
And since you've been on the Maxxis squad for a few years, what are your favorite Maxxis gravel tires?
Well, the tried and true Rambler. You really can't go wrong with that. If you know you have to pick one tire to do it all, that's going to be it. It's just super predictable, easy to ride. Casing's very good. There's options there, for a super heavy duty casing or a a higher TPI casing that's going to be a little more supple. So yeah, Rambler for sure. But the new favorite is definitely the Reaver. It was released last year. I expect that's going to be the go-to for the majority of the racing. And I haven't tried it in a 45 yet. But yeah, really looking forward to that because I do think, just given the tire design, like a fairly kind of a file tread in the middle, okay. I think it's going to scale up pretty good and feel still roll really well in that larger size. Whereas sometimes when you scale up on a super knobby tire, just the speed changes quite a bit.
With your mountain bike skill set.
Casing and the knob design, I guess.
Yeah. Yeah. With your mountain bike skill set, do you feel like that file tread provides you enough kind of traction for most of the gravel races?
Yeah. I feel like I can run with less for sure.
Yeah.
Just because it's just like not a limiting factor for me. I can run, I've raced gravel races on the Refuse, which is just a very tough casing, but it's a full slick with no shoulder knobs.
Yeah.
And I can manage that. You have to ride it a certain way. You can't push it into the ground and expect that it's always going to hook up. But it's a good tool for certain situations. And if you, with tire choices at the pointy end of things, you're always trying to choose the fastest one and ride it. Basically ride it correctly, like manage the tire well. You're never, at least I'm not, I'm always kind of pushing the limits on what I can run for speed and performance.
And will you think about inserts for gravel racing?
Yeah. I use inserts quite a bit, typically on the Tanis Armor inserts. And yeah, if it's rough and there's a puncture risk, I go for it. I think inserts, they kind of came from mountain bike, but they're actually far more applicable for gravel bikes, just given the low volume tire and how close the rim. The tires aren't that tall compared to a mountain bike tire. So So there's kind of very little space for the tire to deflect before it hits the rim. And yeah, having that cushion there and it makes a huge difference. And tire pressure obviously like pretty important on the gravel bike, and sometimes lower if you can manage it is a lot easier on the body, faster. So many things to think about all the time, and I feel like I'm out of practice because I haven't been racing for a few months. So I'm definitely gonna have to brush up on my decision making skills because the race season's coming and all this stuff really matters.
Yeah, 100%. Would you consider Unbound one of those courses that warrants inserts?
Yeah, 100%. Both years I've raced it, I've run inserts. It'll be interesting with the North Route this year on tire choices and on suspension choice as well. Hoping to get there early and kind of suss it out and do some testing there, because it is, you know, equipment choice there matters. And North Route, I hear it's a little rougher.
Interesting. I think that's a good place to end, Andrew. Thanks so much for the time. It's great to get to know you a little bit, and excited to follow you throughout the season and maybe run into you at Sea Otter.
Sounds good. Thanks very much for having me, Craig. And I appreciate the time, and see you at Sea Otter for sure.
That's going to do it for this week's edition of the Gravel Ride Podcast. Big thanks to Andrew for joining the show. We wish him best of luck this season and can't wait to see what he's got in store for us. Huge thanks to our friends at Dynamic Cyclists. Remember, use the coupon code THEGRAVELRIDE for 15% off any of their programs. And until next time, here's to finding some dirt under your wheels.